We're doing Ruth. We had been discussing the first encounter between Boaz and Ruth. And I am happy that some of the people left here. And I apologize to those who remained. I'm about to tell you something that might not make you so happy. Boaz blesses Ruth, right? And Boaz tells her, firstly, he says, keep your eye on the field. And we had learned earlier that when he tells her, don't go to another field, he's telling her, don't leave Judaism. He's telling her, I know how hard it is when you're starting at an older age, you're new to all this, don't leave. And we said from her response, it's very clear that she needed that shot in the arm because it wasn't easy. But the next line he tells her is, may you receive your wages. May you have it in this life and the world to come. May things be good for you. And what we understand there by inference is that it's a given that a convert does not have it good. Boaz has to wish her, I bless you, that things should be materialistically beneficial for you. Because the natural procession of life for a person who converts is a very difficult one. You're switching cultures, languages, you're losing all your contacts. You suddenly have to make it work in a totally new location and at the same time rebuild your whole life, learn a new system. You're learning a new religion. It's a new system of how to bring up your kids. So everything about life is hard. And certainly the financial aspects of life are difficult. And that's what we infer from Boaz giving her that blessing. May you be blessed and successful. And may you have material goods in this life. He's telling her, I'm blessing you with something that ordinarily does not come as a package deal with the conversion process. Usually on the contrary, the conversion process puts a person in a state that's close to being impoverished. So we continue. Yes?
How old was Ruth at this time when she was with Boaz?
That's a great question. Well, if Boaz calls her a na'ara, that indicates that she is about 13, which would mean that her marriage to Mahlon was when she was 2 or 3 years old. Yeah, that gives you a totally different picture. Her father, the king, was ready to marry her off as a minor because, I guess, Mahlon was to a Jew, because Mahlon was such a great personality. He was well known. Mahlon and Chilion were famous personalities.
Would that explain why they didn't have kids with?
That could explain why they didn't have kids all those years. That's a beautiful thing you just said. That could explain why they didn't have kids and why one night with Boaz and she has children. That's a very natural explanation, yes.
What was the natural explanation?
If she was a minor. If she got married at age 2, then that sort of explains why she didn't have kids. There is, I'm not finding it in my notes right now, but there is... there is a medrash that says she was 40. 40 now. So that means she got married to Mahlon when she was in her 20s. 30. Yes. That's a great question. So, right. Why is he calling her Nara? Lemia Nara. Nara Moaviyahi. Right. He was about 400 years old.
Yeah. 400 years older?
400 years. There's a medrash that says that Boaz and Yishai...
There's a medrash that says Og was around from the time of Avram to Moshe Rabbeinu. I don't know.
Noah, right?
So Tosfos says that when the Gemara sometimes says it's the same person, it doesn't literally mean it's the same person. You know, Tosfos points that out, and Chizkuni points that out, and Ibn Ezra points that out. That's true, but sometimes you have to say it is the same person.
So in this case, it is the same person.
In this case, it certainly sounds that way. Let's do the math. If Nachshon ben Aminodav was his father when they left Egypt, Boaz's father, we said, right? I showed you the chart here last class. Boaz's grandfather, I'm sorry, was Nachshon ben Aminodav, right? His father was Salmon. So, and Boaz's great-grandson was David. So you're covering about close to 1,000 years. And... it says when Solomon built the temple, it was 800 and something years from when we left Egypt. So figure King David was king approximately 40 years. So you still have to cover in seven generations, 700 years.
Was it normal that people got this older?
No, no, it was not, it was exceptional. It was not the average, it was not common, and they were known as exceptional people. It's also interesting that Boaz, however old he was only leader of the Jewish people the last 7 years of his life. My brother once pointed out to me that throughout Tanakh, we find that most great people began their legacy, began their greatness at a very old age. We don't know anything about Avram before he's 75 years old. Nothing.
There's Midrashim, though.
But the Pasuk says he was 75 years old. We don't know too much about Moshe Rabbeinu before he's 80. He comes back to Egypt, he's 80. That's when he starts his career. If you look through Tanakh, you see that we by the time we encounter people, they're usually had a lot of life experience. It's a good thing to remember if you're ever invited to a birthday of an 80-year-old. I was invited once, and that's when they asked me to speak, so that's what I said. I said, 80, young man, you got to start working, right? This is when Moshe Rabbeinu started his career. So, okay, back to the Megillah. So Boaz invites her to eat at mealtime with the workers. Boaz tells her, when the time comes to eat, Goshi halom, come here. And our sages have a lot to say about these words. Our sages say there's much more than meets the eye. With each word here, he's giving her a whole Torah, but we don't have time for that. And eat from the bread. And again, our sages say there's much more that he's alluding to. And you'll dip your bread in the vinegar. It'll give you more strength in the heat. Very often people start their day with sweet rugelach. Try for a week starting your day with salty, and you'll see that you have much more energy. The sweet puts you to sleep. The salty wakes you up. So she sat at the side of the male harvesters. She didn't get the hint. He told her, you stick around with my girls, and she stuck around with the boys. So he gives her some dried sweet flour, what's called kali, and she ate a little bit. That's what she needed. And she doesn't want to take too much. And she even leaves over from what she's eaten to bring her mother-in-law home. Vatakom lilaket. So she doesn't sit around schmoozing with the guys, schmoozing with him. She finishes eating. She gets up and goes back to work. Vaitzav. Boaz et ne'arav lemor. Boaz commands the lad, saying, let her collect. And if she collects in between the piles, don't get upset that she's messing up your piles. Leave her be. And when you walk nearby, make believe you've forgotten stuff next to her so that she can gather it. And don't yell at her. So she's gathering all day. And by the time it comes nighttime, she has an eifah. An eifah is... an eifah is 18 kav. An eifah is 3 se'ah, and a se'ah is 6 kav. So an eifah is 18 kav. And a kav is the volume of 24 eggs. So 24 eggs is approximately 2.5 liters. So do the math. 18 times 2.5 liters. You know what a 2.5 liter bottle is, right? Yeah? That's about a 1 liter bottle there. What you got?
1.5.
1.5?
No. This is 1.
That's 1 liter. Okay. So it's... 36 of those. Okay, that's the volume. It's more than 36. It's about 40 of those bottles, if that bottle's a liter. So it's about 40 liters what you gather in one day. Now go carry that in your bag. How are you going to take that home? 40 liters. I mean, you're talking about the size of this bookcase.
That means you're not going to be starving anymore, though.
You're not going to be that hungry, right? So what does she do? She threshes it out in the field. She does all the work to clean so that she'll only have to bring home the kernels that are edible. And this is, again, after a whole day being out in the sun. So this again, shows us her zrizut. Even though she's a princess, she's not spoiled. She does what she has to do. How many times do we go to sleep and we don't do the dishes? I'll do them tomorrow. No. She does it right away. How many times do people go to sleep and they don't put their socks in the hamper? They take them off, throw them by the side of the bed. People floss in bed and leave the floss on the side of the bed. What's going on? I don't have koach. How many people forget or don't bother brushing their teeth at night? We learn from Ruth what it means not to be lazy. They have zrizut. She does what she has to do, and it's the end of the day, and she does not feel like washing the dishes, or in this case, cleaning and threshing the barley. She still has the walk home ahead of her. She does it. She lifts it. She comes into the city. And her mother-in-law sees her coming home with this huge pile. She brings her what she has left over from her satiation. And the Megillah, in my humble opinion, is teaching us something very deep when it comes to being a kind person. The Pasuk says, Tzadik ochel sova nafsho, v'beten reshaim techsar. The tzadik eats and he's full, and the wicked is hungry. So our sages are teaching us an attitude. You have a person who has a guest, and every second he's looking at what's he taking, what's he eating. Especially when it's a guest that's unexpected. Especially when it's a guy who invited himself over and you didn't really want him to come. Especially when your budget is tight. Their budget was tight. A week ago they didn't have shoes. Ruth and Naomi came back to Israel barefoot. So their budget was pretty tight. And Ruth could say, hey, I went out to the field. Of course I get the goodies. Who did all the work here? And who Boaz is giving this to me because he's so impressed with me. Listen to everything Boaz has to say. That has nothing to do with it. Ruth was just given delicious food. So Ruth eats and puts some away for her mother-in-law. But there are two ways to put some away for your mother-in-law. Imagine you're eating a delicious cake. And you say, I'll save a piece for my wife. And you keep eyeing that piece. You slice off a little bit more, a little bit more. You know how it works, right? How are you leaving it over? When Ruth leaves over, it says she left over from her satiation. That's a great person. When I look at it and I say, I had enough. Now I want her to have. And if I really want her to have, so then I'm full. I don't want that. From her being satiated. A righteous person eats and he feels satiated. I had what I needed, I can move on. Do we really need dessert or do we want dessert? There are many things we want. And somehow when it comes to dessert, people have a hard time leaving for someone else. Why? Did you need it? Ruth leaves over from her being full. But though, it says, Vatochal Vatisba. She ate, she was full, she left over. Now, you could also say that this also teaches us about the chesed of Boaz. When we buy food for Shabbos, if we can afford it, part of honoring Shabbos is that you buy enough that you don't have to skimp. If you can afford it, then you could buy exactly the right amount, or you could buy enough that you take what you want and you don't have to worry, is there going to be enough? So it's very likely that Boaz gave her a huge helping where it was obvious she wouldn't finish it. And that's why it says she ate to the point where she was satiated and she had left over. So that she brought home for her mother-in-law. So her mother-in-law tells her, where'd you harvest today? Where'd you do all this? May the man who recognized you be blessed. She tells her mother-in-law, she tells her about the man that she did a favor for. The man that she did a favor for. Who's the man she did a favor for? What favor did she do for Boaz? What'd she do? So our sages say that when a person is on Ruth's level, they can see through the unpleasantries of day to day. We think that if we give charity, we're doing the poor man a favor. Maybe. But our sages say that he's doing a bigger favor to us than we're doing to him. And we don't view it that way because we're not clear-minded. We're not clear-sighted. In our minds, I got the money. You want it. I'm doing you the favor. I'm doing the favor here. You're not doing me any favor. It takes a giant like Ruth to say, yeah, he gave me. I could have gone to another field to collect. And I gave him the merit that he gave an honest person. He gave an honest poor person. He did the mitzvah right. It says, we learned this in the Kovetz Ma'amarim. Rav Elchanan Wasserman discussed, why is it that if you give charity and it turns out that the man was dishonest, he didn't do a mitzvah. But you meant to do a mitzvah. Yeah. You remember we discussed this. Jeremiah prays that the people of Anatot, even when they give charity, it should go to dishonest people. And from there we understood that if you gave charity and you didn't give it to the right place, you didn't do a mitzvah. Or you didn't do such a great mitzvah. So Ruth says, I did him a favor. But that's, you know, if we would say that, we're not on that level. We don't view the world that way. And if we would, we'd be a little cuckoo. You know, I'm doing you a favor. Give me a little bit of money. I want to help you out here, right? We're not on that level. Okay, but Ruth was on that level, and it's a real level. I mean, there can be such a level.
But it doesn't mean we shouldn't allow other people to give us something and think that we are also helping them give something, right?
There's truth to that. There's the famous story Rav Lau said over. A young man came to him and said, my father wants to send me a check. I'm learning in the yeshiva. But I know my father, his stores are open on Shabbos. He sells non-kosher food. He sleeps with women who are not Jewish. I don't want his money. And Rabbi Lau said, let me get this straight. You're telling me your father doesn't maintain family purity, right? He doesn't eat kosher, right? You're telling me he doesn't keep Shabbos, right? So you don't want him to have this mitzvah either? That's, I heard it from Rabbi Lau. I heard it straight from him. Yeah, sometimes, I mean, there's truth to that. There is truth to that. Back to our, back to the Megillah. So, Vatomer Shema Isha Sherasiti Imo Hayom Boaz. She says, the man I did this for, his name was Boaz. Vatomer Naomi Lechalata. So Naomi tells her daughter-in-law, blessed is he to Hashem, who has maintained his kindness for the living and the deceased. Because when he's helping us out, to a certain degree, he's also helping out the deceased. Remember, we discussed whether the deceased sense what's going on in this world or not. So she says, he's giving us, he's doing kindness. Hashem is doing kindness to the living and the dead. And she tells her, stick with his girls. Ruth says, yeah, he told me to stick with his guys. And Naomi says, no, stick with his girls. This time Ruth gets it. And don't let anyone convince you to go to somewhere else. So she sticks with his girls till the finish of the harvest. And now we're approaching Shavuot. They finish the harvest. And so Naomi tells her, what was Naomi's blessing to her? I want you to find rest in your husband's home. So she says, I want that to happen. So our relative is Boaz, the one you were with. So I know at night, he doesn't want people to see how much food he has, so he doesn't go threshing where everyone can see. He does it at night, and it's cool. He goes to sleep out there. And I want you to go down, put on your Shabbos clothes. Here we see that a person should have nicer clothes for Shabbat. White, preferably white shirt, a certain element of white in it. That's why they wear the white kippot sugot. The Sfardim even wear white pants, but Ashkenazim don't. she says, wear your nice clothing, put on nice perfume, wash yourself and put on nice perfume, and then go down and let him eat and drink. And then, when he lies down, come and uncover his feet and lie down next to him, and he'll tell you what to do. So she says, okay, whatever you say, I'll do. Naomi says, my spirit is going down there with you. And I'm telling you that you're supposed to mother a child with him. And Naomi was also a prophet. Naomi says, I'm telling you, the future of the kings of Israel are supposed to come from you. And Ruth says, okay. And then she doesn't listen to her mother-in-law. Her sages say, when a smart person takes what he's told and does it right, does it better. Ruth says, I'm going to go out all dressed up, smelling beautiful. All the guys are going to start with me on the way. They're going to say, why is she all dressed up? Obviously, she wants to attract a guy. Okay. She says, no. She cleans herself. She goes down. And only when she reaches the place in the field where he's working and there's no one around, she finds a modest place. She changes into her nice clothing, puts on perfume, and she waits. And Boaz eats and drinks and then sits to learn. And after he's learning, he prays. And he thanks the Ribbono Shel'olam. He's looking at all the harvest. And he says, Ribbono Shel'olam, you ended the famine. You brought such blessing to the world. Thank you so much. Now that's again the hallmark of a tzaddik. He's buried his wife. He's buried all his children. He's buried all his daughters. He's buried everyone. He could be so miserable. Here he is. He can go to sleep outside alone. When I was a kid, I never understood it. I'd always ask the Rebbe, how could Boaz go to sleep outside all alone? What about his kids? What about his wife? He had no one. No one didn't bother anyone if he went to sleep outside because he didn't have a wife or kids waiting for him anywhere. And he's thanking the Ribbono Shel'olam. And then he lies down and she slips over next to him and he's sleeping deeply. He wakes up in the middle of the night and he's about to yelp. There's a human there by his feet. So she grabs him. Say, yes, who are you? She says, it's Ruth, your maid. I want you to spread your wing over me. You're responsible to be the Redeemer. So Boaz is about to curse her. Boaz looks at her, and the first thought that comes to mind is, this is not the Jewish way to do things. And Hashem puts within him that strength to overcome his first inclination and react positively. And he tells her, blessed are you to Hashem, my daughter. Now you're going to ask, wait a second, why did they do it this way? Weren't you going to ask that? I should have asked that. Why did they do it this way? You know, that's not... So that deserves a long discussion, but we're out of time. No, there are a few answers which complement one another. Okay, so I'll quickly, we'll take 5 more minutes, guys? Yeah? Okay, so let's quickly go over, we'll work our way in. There are places in Tanakh where you read the story and you have no choice but to say, this doesn't make sense without some deeper meaning. The simple reading here doesn't work. If she's so modest and she's the mother of King David and the Davidic dynasty, something else is going on here. Why couldn't they just set up the shidduch normally? So first let's analyze this from a halachic perspective. It says her mother-in-law told her, go wash yourself, which is another way of saying go to mikveh. Why is it that non-married girls don't go to mikveh? It's prohibited. The rabbis prohibited it because if a non-married girl would go to mikveh, then technically if a guy would sleep with her, what they're doing is naughty, it's wrong, it's improper, it's unethical, and it's against the lifestyle that the Torah dictates, but it's not a prohibition that he would get the death penalty for. So long as she does not go to mikveh, then she's a nida, and then it's not only prohibited, it's the death penalty, it's Yehareg Val Yavor. So the fact that all non-married women have not gone to mikveh puts them on a very high level of prohibition. If they would all be going to mikveh, so then, well, it's wrong. But it's not, so long as she's not sleeping around, there's a biblical prohibition of having a zona of woman of ill repute. But if it's if he and she are boyfriend and girlfriend, then if she were going to mikveh, then it would be a much less severe prohibition. So the rabbi said, no mikveh. And the mikveh won't let a woman, if a woman comes to mikveh, and the mikveh knows she's not married, they won't let her dunk. That's the halacha. It's been that way for about a millennium. So we don't let non-married women dunk, and there's a good reason for it. But that institution, that rabbinic institution, wasn't around here. So the first thing is, from a halachic perspective, we have the first part of the story, she tells her, go wash yourself, which means go to mikveh. And so when you're going to go to Boaz, first of all, you're pure. That's step one. Step two. We have a tradition that anytime something good is about to come to the world, then the Satan gets in and he's not willing to let it happen so easily. And I'll give you an example from your own lives. Anyone who's tried to make Aliyah knows that it doesn't go smoothly. Things just don't go smoothly. It's like, why can't this work? And everyone has different hardships at different times. I'd be happy to talk to you, but then we have to end class. We got 2 minutes left. So, Danielle, we'll talk after class. We'll talk after class. Another example would be, It says there's never a wedding without some arguments beforehand. It can't go smoothly. And a third example is Shabbos. It says you can't, you try to go into Shabbos, there's always going to be pressure in the last minute. As much as you try to get ready. Anytime something good comes to the world, the Satan comes in and tries to get in the way. The greater the good, the more the Satan works hard against it. And so our sages said that one aspect of what's going on here with the story that seems very strange, Lot and his daughters, Yehuda and Tamar, Boaz and Ruth, and Yishai and his wife. Every one of those should make us cringe. Lot and his daughters, that's obvious. Yehuda and his daughter-in-law, that's also like, what's going on here? He doesn't even know who he's with. And Yehuda, of all people. Now Boaz with Ruth, it almost happens, but it doesn't. Ruth is coming because her mother-in-law told her, and Boaz told her, you're supposed to be the mother of kings. And Naomi's telling her, I'm telling you this is the way to go. Ruth says, look, I'll listen to you if you're telling me that's what I'm going to do. Ruth goes down. Boaz sees her, and Boaz says, no. It's true that you're supposed to be the mother of kings and prophets. And it's very possible it's going to be for me, but I'm not 100%. And that's the strength of Boaz, where he says, the halacha over here has to prevail. And the custom says that the closest relative comes first. Because really, there was no halacha other than a custom here. And the custom, to some degree, also included the uncovering of feet. As we find that chalitza is you take off the shoe. Our sages say that a shoe represents the body. The body and the soul are described as a shoe and a body. The human in his shoe is the soul in the body. And she's coming and doing an act which represented in those times, you are not doing your job of giving a shoe, so to speak. She's uncovering his feet and saying, you're not doing your job. Remember, in this time, it was not yet prohibited for him and her to mate. That was a prohibition that was instituted by his grandson, David. David HaMelech was the one who made the rabbinic institution that a young man and a young woman can't just get together without Kiddushin and Nisuin. You can't just be together and say, it's okay, she's not a woman of ill repute, she's not going to other people. David HaMelech made that institution. So at this point, technically, halachically, what they were doing was still okay. She went to mikvah, she was permitted to him. Like the Rambam writes, there was an involvement until we reach the point of a marriage looking the way it does today. There was the time from the receiving of the Torah, now Boaz's time, and then King David comes and says, no more, finished, you can't. Yeah. And then the rabbis made further institutions. So if we take that in mind, what's happening here is not so far. Boaz says, you know, there's a way to do it. And from Boaz we learn the ethics that Boaz tells her. You bring 10 people, you do a marriage ceremony, you do the blessing of Sheva Brachos, all of that we learn from Boaz. But the basic idea here from a halachic perspective, so that's number one, the halachic perspective, and also that other idea where they had a certain tradition that in order for things to work out, they're not going to look too good. And if they do look too good, then so to speak, Satan isn't going to let it happen. Our sages tell us even with David's own mother, her husband had told her that he thinks they should take a break, and he sent her to her mother's house, and he was going to take on a new wife, and then she convinced that new wife that she should leave and she'd be there, David's mother. And it says that until Shmuel anointed David, the Medrash Mahamachiri says, on Evan Masu HaBonim, it says that until Shmuel came and anointed him, and even as Shmuel was approaching David, everyone started muttering. Yishai and the brothers, they were all saying, now he's going to tell everyone that we have a bastard in the family. That's what they were all saying. Evan Masu Abunim, everyone was looking down at David. Even as Shmuel was approaching him to anoint him. And then he anoints him and they all stand there and go, what? And he says, yeah, he's kosher. So the mother always claimed, I snuck back. I switched with your new wife and I snuck back. Why did it have to play itself out this way? So the Chida says this idea we just discussed. That when good things, amazing things come to the world, it's as though they have to come shrouded. It's not going to look as overt. It happens to be that Boaz is the most overtly good. The way Boaz overcomes and says, no, we're doing this kosher. Okay, so that's in a nutshell a partial answer which deserves